I do not think the government did a good job investigating the whole situation. From everyone I spoke to, from coworkers to friends to outsiders, everyone has a different story. I myself was in the building. I cannot understand how people were in two World Trade Center on fire in an elevator and the second plane did not hit yet. I don't understand how on the truck dock, when I spoke with Anthony and William, how there was black smoke in the B1 level, which was two or three levels below grade, the first plane hit, and how was there black smoke in the basement already? It's unexplainable. And there's other stories from other people that it doesn't sound right.
That's a clip from The Rubble, a new documentary that tells the story of Willie Rodriguez, a World Trade Center janitor who was the last man out of the North Tower on September 11th. The film details Willie's heroic efforts on that day, his ongoing heroic efforts to find out what really brought the buildings down. He is my good friend, Willie Rodriguez. Hello, Willie.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yes, I'd love to have you on every day, frankly, because your story is so remarkable. And the way that I got interested in this whole 9/11 thing was I was on The View when they wanted to do the first week right around the anniversary of September 11th. They wanted to have on a man from Popular Mechanics who wrote a book debunking the 9/11. And the producer of that show, rabid Republican, and this man's agenda was very hinky to me. I'm like, what is this guy about? There's something wrong. This smells bad, you know? Didn't pass the smell test. And so I started Googling, and that's when I found you.
That's correct.
Yeah. Tell everybody what you did for a living.
I was the janitor that worked in the North Tower. I cleaned 110 floors of stairwells every single day.
For how many years?
I worked in the building for 20 years, but doing the stairwells was 10 years.
10 years.
But the first 10 years in the building, I worked cleaning the office of Governor Mario Cuomo when he was the governor of New York.
Right.
He had an office on the South Tower on the 57th floor. And I was the person in charge of basically the maintenance with another guy named Richie Barrett.
Now, you had a pass key. You had one of five master keys, right?
That is correct.
And you had one. Why did you have a master key?
In 1996, while I was mopping the floors on the upper levels of the North Tower, I slipped and I went down a whole flight of stairwells and I hit my back and I couldn't stood up. And the company didn't send anybody to look for me.
Because they didn't know, because you were cleaning the stairway,
exactly.
Right.
And they didn't have any way to locate me. It's 110 floors. So what I did, I went and I opened a litigation case, a workers' arbitration case against the Port Authority, and I sued for the key, not for money, not for compensation of any kind, but a key and a radio.
Just so that if you ever were in that
situation
again, you would have a way to get yourself out and to get help.
And the Port Authority at that time, they said, no, you know, that's only for building managers, and you need to have security clearance. What at that moment was a mistake for them to say that, because for the years that I work at the governor's office, I needed security clearance.
So you already had it, right?
Exactly.
So they had no reason not to give it to
Correct.
You. Correct. Okay, so you have this key, and it's on your person.
It's on my person.
So it's September 11th, 2001, and you decide you're not coming into work.
Yeah, because it was a beautiful day.
It
was eerily beautiful. It was so clear skies. And I said, no, I'm going to stay home. And I said, well, you know, I'm just going to take a sick day and stay home. So I called my supervisor, Anthony Saltalamacchia, and I said, Anthony, I am not going to work. Put it down as a sick day.
Right.
And he went crazy.
And he said, no, you have to come. We have no one else to do it.
That is correct, because nobody else wanted to do 110 flights of stairwells.
And you were in tremendous physical shape from walking those stairwells every day for 10 years.
Yes. Every day.
Okay, so you get into work at what time?
At 8:30.
You punched in.
I punched in on the B1 level. The building has six up levels of basement. Went straight to the B1 office for American Building Maintenance, the company that I worked for, and started talking to Anthony and the people that were in there. There were 14 people inside the office.
There are 14 people there. It is 8:30.
8:30.
And then you hear an explosion.
At 8:46, you know, spending time talking about the distribution of the work of the day, at 8:46 we hear boom, an explosion, very loud, very hard, push us upwards. And
now say that again, Willie. It pushed you upwards.
Upwards. It pushed me upwards and everybody else in there.
So 14 people were lifted off their feet a little bit, a few inches,
correct.
And then back to the ground because
correct.
The explosion that you heard, you felt,
pushed us.
Came from below you.
From below. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that came to my mind at that moment was that a generator has blown up inside the mechanical room that was located right below us on the B2 level.
Right.
Of course, you know, it's a speculation of my part because I don't know exactly what it was.
Right, but it's 8:46. You exactly. hear a boom. You think right away the generator blew.
Exactly.
Everyone gets up and goes to see what happened?
Not only, at that moment, the walls cracked. The ceiling fell on top of us. The sheetrock opened up inside the office. The fax machine fell on the floor. Sprinkler system got activated. Water started spewing everywhere. When I went to verbalize, 6 or 7 seconds after, that it was probably a generator blowing up because everybody's screaming.
Right,
horror.
Right.
Horror. And at that moment, we hear, bah! All the way on the top of the building.
So this was a second explosion you heard.
You heard two
sounds. The first one that lifted you off your feet, you
correct.
And 14 people. And then 7 or 8 seconds later, you heard another explosion.
All the way on the top.
Yes. And was there a difference in how you felt the vibrations of those two explosions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Remember, I worked there for 20 years. I will know exactly the difference between something coming from the top and something coming from the basement.
Right.
And it was a clear difference. And the stuff from the top, it was explosion impact. So, of course, it just didn't go with the official story. That, you know, it was just a plane. And
right, but even before we get to the official story, that day, you and 14 people are there. You hear an explosion. You're lifted off your feet and down. 7 seconds later, you hear another one. The fire, water is going everywhere. There's buildings, ceilings falling. And
smoke. There's this horrible smoke. And it smelled like wet cardboard.
Like wet cardboard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, everybody's screaming. A guy comes running into the office saying, explosion, explosion, explosion.
No, this was not Philippe David.
Yes, this is Philippe David.
He's the one who's screaming.
Yes.
Even though he is burned.
Yes.
Okay, so Philippe David was on the second level, sub-level basement 2, B2.
He was by the elevator.
On B2,
yes.
One below you.
Exactly.
And he was by the elevator filling the vending machines.
The cart to fill up the vending machine. He worked for Automark, the company that supplied the vending machines with supplies. And as he went to fill up his cart in his little closet, an explosion happened. Fire started coming from everywhere under the door and started burning his skin.
Right. So when he ran in and said to you, explosion, explosion, his skin was hanging off his body?
All his skin.
All of his skin.
33% of his body from the upper torso. Missing parts of his face.
Mm-hmm.
Bleeding. At the beginning, I thought he had a red shirt, but it was actually a soaked in blood shirt.
Right.
So
what was your first reaction? You and 14 others see Philippe
everybody,
David,
horror. Horror.
And does anyone rush towards him?
Horror. We were in shock. Nobody wanted to touch him.
Right.
Because this was 2001 and nobody wanted to touch anybody with blood because of the AIDS virus.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody's helping the poor man.
And how long did he stand there saying?
No. So I started right away putting towels around him, cleaning towels.
Right.
To help him because nobody wanted to touch him.
Okay.
They
so
said,
then,
well, you know, what's wrong with you?
So then you wrapped him up?
I said, don't move because I'm going to pick up the phone to call the emergency medical unit that is located on the South Tower. You see the North Tower and the South Tower connected through the basement.
Right.
So when I went to pick up the phone, bah! Another explosion.
You heard another explosion.
Another explosion.
Around what time was this, Willie?
No, this is just, after Felipe comes in, probably minutes after.
Right.
And it was so powerful again that the building oscillated so much that you could hear the cracking of the walls. At that moment, everybody started running inside the offices and going under the door frames, thinking that it's an earthquake because
right.
the floor is moving.
Got
below
it.
Us. It's still moving. And that's when I realized that nobody's doing anything.
Right. So you wrap Philippe David and you take him and you first call the medical center?
No. I never had the opportunity to.
Okay,
because
so you pick
it was
up,
total chaos.
You pick him up, Philippe David, and you walk him down to the loading dock.
At that moment, everybody wanted to go to the middle center that led through the stairwells that went to the lobby. And I said, no, there was Kenny Johanneman, Survivor. There were other people. And I said, no, don't go that way because that's probably where the problem is.
Right.
Follow me. I know the best way. And I basically led this whole group with Felipe through the loading dock all the way outside the building. When we get outside, there was an ambulance. I stopped the ambulance. I put Felipe inside the ambulance with the help of the others. And when I do that, I hear a plane hit the building, a plane hit the building. I looked around the ambulance and I see everybody looking up.
Right.
And that's when I turned around and I saw the hole, the fire, the debris, the smoke. But the smoke was so dense that it covered the top of the building. And I couldn't see the antenna.
So at this point, only your building was hit at this point.
Correct.
Okay. So you look up, you see a big mass of smoke. You hear that there's a plane. Everybody's looking up.
Yes.
And you decide to go back in.
Nobody wanted to go in. And I started, we got to go back in. The people from Windows. Windows of the World was the restaurant that was on the top of the building.
Right. And all of your friends worked at Windows of the World.
Yeah. Many of my friends worked there.
Right. And you would often have breakfast there in the morning.
Every morning.
Right.
I would go there at 8 o'clock that day. I didn't come in on time. So
because you were going to call
it
in.
It was a miracle that I was basically late.
Right. Because normally you would have been up at Windows of the World.
Correct.
So what you wanted to do after you see the dense smoke and you look up and people are screaming it's a plane, you want to go back in and try to help your friends.
Of course.
And that's what you did.
And I started
going back in. And who went with you?
Nobody.
No one.
Nobody.
So you went in and you knew you had the pass key, the master key.
I went straight to the South Tower. I went to the Operation Control Center, the OCC, that was created after the bomb of 1993.
Uh-huh.
And to ask for help and to let them know that I had a person that was burnt outside the building.
Right. And what happened when
there was nobody there.
There was no one there.
No.
So
it was people there earlier because there's transcript. But at the moment that I went there, nobody was there.
And is this before the second plane hit?
No. This is the second plane has not hit yet.
Right. So this is before the second plane hit. So you go into the OCC and it's empty.
It's empty. I'm hitting the window. Nobody's coming out. I look and the doors are open. You can see through it and there's nobody there.
No one is there.
A person comes from the subgrades up. His name is Jimmy Barrett, and he said, you know, what's going on? He didn't know what was going on.
Right.
He was in the South Tower, and he was all the way below, so that basically shielded him, the noises or whatever, of what was going on outside. And I said, you know, basically in a couple of seconds, you know, there was an explosion, there was a person burned, I have to take everybody out, you have to get out.
Right.
And when I turn around, I see a lady that was actually permitting the employees to the Marriott Hotel to go in because that was the entrance for the employees. And she's standing there trembling on the podium. And I said, what are you doing there? They had a podium and she's shaking. I said, what are you doing? And she said, I heard everything, but I cannot leave. And I said, why? He said, because I am a new employee and I don't want to get fired.
Right.
While everybody was gone.
Right. So you convinced her to leave.
I pushed it out.
Yes.
I pushed it out. And then with Jimmy Barrett, I went straight to the North Tower. And that's where I found a guy that worked for the recycling company that was screaming. I hear screams. But, you know, there was a sprinkler system
right.
going, shh.
Right. The sprinkler system was on. And
yeah.
you were back in the North Tower, which was first hit. And the second plane had not hit yet.
Not yet.
And he heard screams in the elevator.
Correct.
And
in one of the elevators. We didn't know where.
You didn't know where because the sound of the water was so loud. But he heard people screaming. And
correct.
He was trying to find where they were. And you helped him. And you were...
Actually, I put one of my ears in one of the elevators. And effectively, there were two people stalking there screaming for help. And it was a freight elevator. I said, how many of you in there? And they said, there's two people in here. We're going to drown. I couldn't understand why they would be drowning.
Right. How could they be drowning if they're...
Because all the water from the sprinkler system was going down the elevator shaft. These people went in because there was an explosion. And to protect themselves, they went into the freight elevator. The freight elevator, instead of going up, started going down and they lost electrical power. So they got stuck between two levels, between the B2 and the B3 level.
Right. And when you went back in after you went to the OCC, were you still on sub-level basement one?
Basement one, correct.
Yes. So you put your ear to the elevator. You hear people in the freight elevator saying, we're drowning. We need to get out. You try to open the elevator. You can't open the elevator.
No. We opened the elevator. The doors open up, but there was no elevator. The shaft was empty because the elevator was way below.
Right.
We could see from the position that we were that, you know, there was no ceiling. It's a cage. It's a freight elevator, so you don't have a regular
ceiling. Right, so you
ceiling.
Saw the people.
Yeah, with water up to their bellies.
Right, terrible. terrified.
Yes.
And so you thought to yourself, we need a ladder. How are we going to get a ladder?
I said, no, no, no. I said, God, please help me. And I was not a person that believed in anything at that moment. I started praying like crazy.
Yeah.
I said, please help me. And I remember that in the area where they have the trash compactors for the building, the electricians always have ladders that they tied up with chains so nobody will steal them.
Right.
So I started running, saying, let me find one, let me find one, let me find one.
And there was one.
The only one that was not tied up and locked with the chain was the longest one of all of them. It was like he was there to save them. So I picked it up. I went straight there, dropped it down, went down, and with the help of the others, we were able to get these two people out. I pulled Salvatore Giambanco, a painter from the Port Authority that I did not know before, and another guy was a delivery guy. Pull them out, you know, those stories about the adrenaline pumping,
yes,
you get this strength. I was able to experience that. I take them out, went straight outside the building, put them in an ambulance, and went back inside the building alone again.
Right.
And as I go in, all I hear is, you know, don't go back, don't go back.
Right.
What's wrong with you? You're stupid and things like that.
But you're still thinking about your friends. And
I'm
the...
still thinking about people on Windows of the World that are probably trapped.
Right.
And when I get inside, I only found one person, Port Authority police officer David Lim, who was a sergeant in charge of the canine unit.
Right.
And he said, Willie, do you have the key? Do you have the key? Meaning the master key. And
right.
I said, yes, I have it. We made it to the lobby. When we get to the lobby, what do I see? Total chaos. The fire department is there with something called the fire access key, waiting for the freight elevator to pick them up.
Yeah.
I say, don't wait for the elevator. And the police officer said, follow him. He knows the building very well, and he has the master key. So this whole unit of heroes, my heroes, started to follow me. But it was very sad because, you know, they have so much weight on their backs.
Right. They had to carry all their equipment, and then they weren't used to walking up 110 flights of stairs. So you, without any equipment on you and also being very fit and used to doing the job, you led these firemen up, but some of them couldn't keep up with you.
That is correct.
How far up did you get?
First time we made it to the 27th floor. As we went up, there was sounds of explosions on the lower levels from the 44th floor down, not from the area that was impacted by the plane.
So as you're going up, you're hearing explosions below you.
Correct.
Right.
And I asked the firemen, what was that? What was that? And they will say, oh, that must be the gas tanks blowing up inside the kitchens, the office kitchens.
Right.
And which didn't explain anything to me because I worked in the building for 20 years and I knew the kitchens were all electrical.
Right. So you knew there were no gas tanks.
Exactly.
But they were telling you it was gas tanks.
It may have been that.
And so you keep going and you meet people along the way.
One person tells me, I found myself sometimes two or three floors above the firemen opening doors. Remember, I had the master key. They have to go in as a unit, spread around the floor and look on every corner to see if they have any survivors. And let me also clarify that when the plane hit the top of the building oscillated so much that many of the doors got jammed. And that's why we needed the key, because of the frame of the doors.
Right.
Shifting position. So that's why when I went up, one person tells me, two people coming down, one of them tells me, there's a man in a wheelchair on the 27th floor. I don't know how to help a handicap.
Right.
And I went to the firemen's and they told me we'll make it over there. We made it to the 27th floor. And then all these heroes, one by one, collapsed on the floor, Rosie. And they took their boots. Some of them took their jackets because they couldn't keep up anymore.
Right. They didn't have more
stamina.
Right.
And when I saw that, I said, oh my God, this is so shocking. And the person on the wheelchair, his name, Ed Baye, was having a kind of an asthma attack because mm-hmm. he couldn't breathe. And
Was there a lot of smoke then?
In some floors.
Yeah.
Not every floor.
Not floors. Every floor. Just some floors
some
had
floors.
Smoke.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And that's when I realized that, wow, these people don't have maybe the knowledge. I mean, it was nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew what was happening. You outside of the perimeter, you watching this on television, you have better information than we did being inside the building.
Right. And still at this point, the second plane had not hit yet.
Has not hit yet. I called my mother. I remember I called my mother in Puerto Rico to let her know that there was an accident in the building. Oh, what a surprise. She was watching this like the whole world on television.
Right. And she kept screaming, Willie,
get out.
And you said no.
No.
Yeah.
I said, I'm helping these people and they don't know what they're doing. In my ignorance, I'm saying that.
Yeah.
And and I will help them up to a certain point, and then I will leave. I was getting calls on the radio by my company, Willie Rodriguez, location, please abandon the building, meet us on this position. And, you know, you can get the transcripts of that, of those calls. As I see that, I hang up the phone. I remember that the police officer said, do you know this floor? I said, yes. Where can we get water? And a very kind of a funny situation was that I said, well, it's on the other side. Is a vending machine there that have bottled water. I said, let's go. And he started breaking the machine glass with his boot. And I start, oh, no, I'm getting out of here. I'm the Puerto Rican. They're going to blame me.
And in the middle of that, you're worrying about being arrested for stealing water.
Exactly.
Okay. So the guy with the wheelchair, you end up helping them get him down.
No. So I left them on the 27th floor.
Yes.
And I continue by myself alone because they couldn't keep up. They're on the floor. I keep up going by myself, opening doors and checking on floors, letting people out up to the moment that I get to the 33rd floor. When I get to the 33rd floor, I found a lady on the floor, basically trembling, and an American lady, blonde lady, and I said, what are you doing here? She was a new employee in the building, also like the lady from the security guard, that didn't know where the exits were or what to do in an evacuation.
Right. In an emergency.
In an emergency, yes. And basically stood her up, said, you got to get out, brought her to the door. There were two people coming down from the 44th floor cafeteria. I said, Willie, we'll help you. And they brought her down. I went back inside the 33rd floor and went to a closet that I called my office.
Mm-hmm.
But it's where I had all the
cleaning supplies. Right.
Exactly. So while I'm there picking up a box of dust masks that I use on the stairwell to distribute to the people, I hear strange noises coming from the 34th floor. And it was like, you know, they were moving massive equipment. And it scared me so much that I didn't even open the door on the 34th floor. I continue by myself opening the other doors, but I bypassed that floor.
And why did it scare you?
Because I knew there was a construction floor. There was nobody there. It was supposed to be empty.
So the 34th floor was supposed to be empty.
Correct.
And while you were on the 33rd, you heard obviously people moving things in there.
I heard a very strange going, like scratching the floor, like those big dumpsters, steel dumpsters, scratching the floor. And it scared me.
Yeah.
It scared me.
So you skipped that floor.
I skipped that floor.
You kept going up.
I kept going up to the moment that I get to the 39th floor. Opening doors. On the opposite side, there were three stairwells, A, B, and C. From one of the stairwells, Officer David Lim comes up with two firemen. And he said, Willie, you know, this is what we're going to be doing. We started talking about the process. All of a sudden, we hear, bah! Another explosion, but coming from the South Tower. And at that moment, I'm speculating that is the plane hitting the other tower. Of course, you know, I have no windows. And of course, it wasn't the second plane hitting the other tower. It was maybe the collapse of the other tower. We have no way to know.
Right.
And when I hear that, we actually lost our footing. We hear pa, 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 pa inside the building, our building. And we hear on the radio, we lost 65, meaning the 65th floor collapsed floor by floor up to the 44th floor. And this is what David Lim is telling me. There's a collapse. It's an internal collapse. You know, the 65th floor collapsed up to the 44th floor.
There's an internal collapse in your building, building that you're in.
Well, that's what, you know, David Lim is explaining to me. And it sounded exactly like that. I have no windows. I have no way to go up to find out. And at that moment, I go crazy. Now these people are really trapped. I say, we got to go up. And the officer said, no, Willie, you've done enough, but you don't get paid for this. You got to get out. I say, no, I'm going up. I don't care. And he said, better if you give me a hand with the person on the wheelchair on the 27th floor and get out. He said, David, I will help you. I will bring him down, but I'm coming back because I'm not giving the key to anybody. And like they needed the key, you know? Yeah, they could have done it. They could break any doors, basically.
Yeah, with an X, right.
Yeah. And so I made it to the 27th floor. I said, I have orders to get this man out. And these three heroes stood up. I said, let's go. And we started bringing Ed Bayer down the stairwell. As we go down, I could remember clearly, second by second, everything that we were going through. Rosie, going down there, it was so riveting in the sense that you could hear the people screaming on the elevators, stuck in the elevator, passenger elevators that could not be safe,
right?
Because we didn't have the tools or the knowledge. You could hear the cracking. You could hear the things blowing up. You could smell the acrid, dense smoke, and at the same time, you could feel all these chunks coming and falling right around you, and. We hear, bah, the huge explosion again. And I remember telling Ed Bayer, the handicapped man, don't worry, after this, we're going to go for a beer. And he goes, yes. We made it to the lobby. When we make it to the lobby, what I see, total destruction in the lobby. All the walls, that beautiful marble was pulled from the wall. You could see the cement patches where the marble was. I look to the left and I see that the whole area where they have the mezzanine and the concourse was totally collapsed. Of course, that South Tower already was gone. And I look to the right and three firemen comes over and one of them said, get the ambulance ready, get the ambulance ready. So I started going to the front of the building that faced West Side Highway. And as I get closer to where the revolving doors were, there was no revolving doors. All the glass is gone. All the doors are broken into pieces. And I make it to the right frame of the middle revolving door. And that's when I hear, don't look back, don't look back, don't look back. It was the police. They were across the street. And they had the area cordoned out. So they're telling me not to look back. And, of course, the first thing I do is to look back.
Right.
And when I turn around, Rosie, I saw all the people that jumped out of the building from that side of the building.
Right.
There were body parts everywhere. There were unrecognizable bodies because the impact was so powerful that the only thing that you saw was mass,
yeah.
Body mass. And then I started screaming and crying because the only thing that I was able to realize at that moment is that I recognized one lady, and it was that lady from the 33rd floor, and she was cut in half, and apparently a glass came from the top of the building and basically cut her in half, and it was so horrible, and we are talking seconds.
Yeah.
This is just, you know, a matter of seconds, and I hear, run, 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 and the floor started to tremble like an earthquake, and you could hear the whole building coming down. I have nowhere to escape, and in front of the building, the only thing I saw was a fire truck. I slipped right under.
Right
under, and the building started to collapse right on top of the fire truck, and you could hear, pa, 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 and the truck going down until I was trapped under the rubble.
How long were you trapped?
Several hours.
And who pulled you out?
Well, there were two television stations over there that basically pinpointed the area where I was, and I was pulled by the fire department.
So now, here's where the story gets interesting.
I tried to tell my story to the government. From the very beginning, you know, we were fighting to have a 9/11 commission to be created. The government really didn't want it. We pushed very hard until it was created. After it was created, I testified behind closed doors.
So you testified for the 9/11 commission.
Correct.
Behind closed doors. You, who helped over 100 people out, they say, right?
Yeah.
Are you responsible for saving those lives? That you went back in. You were the last person to leave the building to survive. And you testified for how long?
Oh, it was hours.
Hours and hours. Were you, was your testimony recorded in the 9/11 Commission report?
No, it doesn't appear anywhere in the 576 pages of the final report. That you cannot find that anywhere. But as a matter of fact, it's funny because this year I pushed for the National Archives to make my testimony public. And actually, I put it on the internet. You can find not the actual testimony, the notes of the investigators, of two investigators, are available, but the actual testimony is still considered confidential.
So your testimony that you're now telling here, that you, the truth that you told to the 9/11 Commission, was not included in the report.
No.
Did
no.
they speak to any of the 14 people who heard the initial explosion?
They never called a single one of them.
No, not one of them.
No.
Did they ever talk to Felipe David?
No.
No, and Felipe David survived the burn.
That is correct.
And where is Felipe David now?
He's going still through therapy. I mean, this a person that was burned 33% of his body is still going through therapy.
Now, has anyone told you that you should not be telling this story?
Oh, hundreds of people.
Has anyone in the government ever told you you shouldn't
yes.
be telling?
Yes.
And who would that be?
Well, people in different levels of the government, and I have met many people from intelligence as well. They have told me, you know, that I'm actually creating much, very much trouble for bringing this up and trying to convince me not to go around the world as I have done, trying to get answers. And this is just a little part of the many questions, unanswered questions that are there. My personal story, it just adds up to all these issues that the families have concerning what happened to their loved ones on 9/11 and after 9/11. Because, you know, we have issues, for example, we have the Families for Proper Burial, for example, that have signed affidavits that from witnesses that saw the ashen remains of their loved ones being used for potholes.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you have these kind of issues, you realize that my story is just a piece of this huge puzzle of unanswered questions.
But you are in contact with a lot of the people, a lot of the survivors, a lot of the first responders who are now
Correct.
Really in serious physical health because of the 9/11 disease, of their lungs collapsing. And you've done all you can to go through different countries, because the American media really is not too interested in your story. In fact, when they interviewed you on ABC and you told them that you heard a first explosion, they edited the piece so that the voiceover after you said there was an explosion, the voiceover
they
said
cut right there, yeah.
To it was the plane, but it was not the plane.
Correct.
You did not hear the first explosion that you heard was definitely in the basement, and it burned the skin off Felipe David, who is still alive.
Correct. It's correct. Creative editing.
Creative editing. We have somebody on the phone who actually worked at the World Trade Center. Hi, Randy. Are you there?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're talking to me and Willie Rodriguez.
Hi, Randy.
Hi, Rosie. Hi, Willie. First, I would like to say that I am so honored to participate in this call with William Rodriguez. I can't even imagine what you have been through, and you are truly an American hero.
That is so true.
Well,
this is
you,
a man
Randy.
Who needs to be celebrated and honored, and his story needs to be told on a daily basis until we get to the truth of what happened
that
day.
No, there were so many heroes. Everybody was a hero that day, especially the victims that didn't make it. They tried to help everybody else to get out. So I'm just... Yeah, I just did what I thought it was right at that moment, and as everybody else did as well. So I believe that, much could have been done I'm not talking about conspiracy theory now. I'm talking about, you know, the preparation of the building, the evacuation techniques that they should have implemented from the very beginning. When you have a building with over 50,000 employees and you have only drills twice a year, that doesn't make any sense, because the amount of people getting fired, getting hired is a constant mathematically.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, this woman, Randy, she actually worked there. Is that true?
Yes.
And Randy, you know that that what I'm saying is true, because you probably went only to two drills a year. Is that correct?
Correct.
What did
correct.
You do there, Randy? What was your job?
I worked for an insurance brokerage company called Marsh & McLennan. We were located in the first tower. I worked
yes.
on the 96th floor.
Yes.
And how did you get out?
I was very lucky, because I was late that morning.
Mm.
So I wasn't actually there when it happened, but our company lost over 300 people. If I would have looked to the right, left, front, and behind me, everyone who sat around me died.
Yes.
It was really horrible, and it's an issue that's very close to my heart, and this is why I'm so grateful, actually, to both of you for bringing this to the forefront and letting awareness exist for what really happened, because the difficult thing is it's so hard to go through this and to lose so many friends and colleagues. I lost people that I worked with and for 9 years. It's been very, very difficult to come to terms with it. But what has made it even more difficult is what you both have been talking about. It's so frustrating when you have questions that are constantly going unanswered.
Well, yeah, so when you're considered unpatriotic, if you're just questioning what happened, I mean, you know, democracy is based on dissent, and I don't have a conspiracy theory either. I don't have any knowledge or preconceived notion of who did it or why, but I can tell you this, if you ask all the leading scientists in the world, it defies the laws of physics for a building to fall at free fall speed without any kind of explosions being used or any kind. So, you know, there are things that don't make sense. They don't add up. And the 9/11 Commission report was a joke. If the man who was there, who was eyewitness to so much of it, Willie Rodriguez, is not even mentioned in the report after testifying.
Exactly. See, I'm like you, Rosie. I don't have any preconceived notions. It's not about conspiracy theories or anything like that. I just have honest questions. I mean, when I see that William Rodriguez's story is not in the 9/11 report, when I see that the collapse of Building 7, no explanation for that was included in the report.
Yes, you know what, Randy, when I was on The View and I was talking about this, you know, and I said to Elizabeth Hasselbeck, do you know how many buildings fell that day? And she said two, and I was like, no. Like, so just the basic fact, and who were the tenants of the World Trade Center 7? Who was the owner of that building? You know, I don't know. Who did the security for 9/11, for the Twin Towers during 9/11? There are so many questions that need to be answered for the American public to know.
Exactly. And I feel that it adds insult to the injury because I know it's been years later and I've tried to get over it and move on to the best of my ability. It was a great loss in my life. Knowing that our government and the media is ignoring, I mean, there's evidence of thermite that architects can attest to. And yet, with front page news, we hear about David Letterman's love life.
Exactly.
And we don't hear about these important issues, which is why I cannot stress how grateful I am to both of you.
Well, it is the art of distraction in the United States media. And when, you know, media conglomerates also are in other industries and they benefit from what news they tell and they don't, one has to wonder whether the Fourth Estate is actually functioning in this country. And, you know, it's a pretty sad state of affairs when ABC News is able to alter and edit the truth of what a witness said in order to, you know, benefit themselves. And it's pretty scary and it's pretty sad. And
what is immoral to Rosie, I might add, and Randy will be 100% in agreement with this, is that when you have a country that spent close to $40 million to investigate Monica Lewinsky and only $11 million on a 9/11 commission for the death of 3,000 plus people, you know, is very, very immoral. It's a slap in the face to the victims.
Yes, it is. And it's the largest crime ever perpetrated on American soil. And the fact that that crime scene was not sealed off and that there was all of the metal and evidence was gone and disappeared. And also the fact of molten lava. Molten metal lava.
Listen to this and put a little concentration to this issue. Building 7 was the fastest one that was built.
Yes.
Fastest. I mean, it was hugely a speed-up process to make it constructed in the area. They found body remains in many buildings, the Deutsche Bank, potholes, everywhere. You're going to tell me they didn't find human remains in that building, and they probably said, forget about it. You know, if you find anything, just cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that problems that we have as victims, you know, when we see that they didn't call the military pact to come in there and take over. I spoke to Dr. Dot Rocky, the father of the depleted uranium program and disaster manager of emergencies in the United States. His unit was supposed to be called. He called the EPA directly, and he was told to shut up and go away.
Yeah.
When he said the area has to be contained.
Right.
Nobody should go in until we send our, you know, experts. And no, they don't care.
Right. Randy, thank you so much for calling. And
thank you, Randy.
I wish you peace because I know from being close friends with Willie what this has done to his personal life, his emotional health, his psyche, and how every fall, every September, all the way through October, when that weather comes, it's like post-traumatic stress for all the people who survived it and for the nation as a whole. So I wish you peace, and I hope that one day we'll get an accurate investigation as to what actually did happen.
Thank you so much. May I just ask you one more question?
Yes, you certainly can.
I think, William Rodriguez, you know about this. Just very, very important, quickly. I understand that there has been an initiative, because I know I signed a petition for it, to enable people in New York City to vote for an investigation.
It was taken down by the judge. We went, first of all, they said that 30,000 signatures were invalid. And then we went to court with a bunch of volunteers to recount them. And they said, okay, no, they're valid now. And after they said they're valid, we wanted to put the initiative on the ballot. And the decision of the court was that it was not going on the ballot.
After
we have 80,000 New Yorkers signing the petition, that should have override any veto.
Yeah, that's
just gone now. It's not going to happen.
Well, it's an obstacle. We're going to continue fighting, and we are going to make an appeal. We are working on different angles now. So, and actually, we're working on the international inquiry as well to try to. If that doesn't work, we go through the international inquiry.
Yeah, it's
what my fear is that let's say it does pass.
They're waiting, Randy. They're waiting for us to die one by one. That's exactly what's happening. That's what's happening with the first responders. How come they have not received all the help they need? You know, they are dying.
Any help, not even all the help they need. I mean, we're going to do a whole show on just first responders because that is absolutely shocking. These people who are heroes, who went, who showed up to save others, they're now dying at an alarming rate from this horrible disease that the government won't even say exists.
Correct.
And they can't get any health coverage, and they're dying in poverty. It's absolutely tragic. And, you know, instead of the boy floating around in the Mylar bubble, perhaps we can focus a little bit on this. Thank you for calling, Leslie. And, I mean, Randy, we're going to go to Leslie, actually, right now. How are you? What's your question?
Hi, Willie. I just want to say I'm thrilled to be talking to Rosie, but I just feel so honored to be talking to you. And please just continue to speak your truth, and you're doing a great service for America and the world. I have questions, and that's, as you said, about accusations. I don't know or care so much. To move forward, we have to have our questions answered.
Yes.
And I don't understand how the plane crash in Pennsylvania and at the Pentagon, the cleanup was done, you know, in a couple of days, everything was gone. And
yeah,
there's never been any even amateur video from the Pentagon?
Well, it was all confiscated. There were videos of, you know, something hitting the Pentagon, and
there's
all
so
of them were
that has not been released.
Yes.
And I hope that in the future, by pressure, by FOIAs, you know, Freedom of Information Act efforts, we'll be able to get all the stuff that we need. We need to do this for closure, especially for the victims. The nation is still in pain. Sadly, they have used 9/11 for every excuse in the book. 9/11 has been, remember last election, this last election, everything was 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, trying to instill fear on everybody's heart to vote for this particular candidate. Even Giuliani was using 9/11 nonstop. Because you have to vote for me because, you know, I'm the best person to deal with another 9/11. You can't do that. You know, this is our pain, our despair. We are suffering still 8 years after. We have no emotional closing. We cry constantly. We have survivor's guilt. I have survivor's guilt. I'm here doing this because it's a mission that I have to glorify that second opportunity of being alive. But I need to have answer for those friends that I lost, to those families that I represent. Is the regular people like you and like Rosie that give us the support, you know, that keep us at least trying to reach out to the nation, because otherwise we probably be shut down by everybody else when it comes to the people in power.
You have to continue living your good life, and I believe good always triumphs over evil eventually. And I don't know what evil this is, but all the unanswered questions. I think it was you that got interviewed by Rob Morrison on WNBC4 soon after 9/11, and you said you heard the explosion below, and he tried to correct you, and you said, no, I heard it below me. I know what I heard. And you could see that he couldn't wrap his brain around it. And there are things that happen that we don't wrap our brains around. And I live in an area outside of New York City, and I have a lot of firefighters and police officers as my neighbors. And I have a couple friends who worked in the city, and everyone that was present that day cannot talk about it. Not does not talk about
it. No, it's a shock. It's a shock. And they have done studies. You have the educational study that has been done for the students that were affected that were in the Stuyvesant High School right around the World Trade Center. They're all showing some stressful attitudes 8 years after. So
yeah,
never
mind the suicides.
No,
right?
we don't have the numbers of all the suicide that has happened since 9/11. We don't have a number.
But one of your friends that you, Kenny, right?
Kenny Johanneman. I look for a friend of mine that was a survivor that was on the basement that helped me with Felipe David on 9/11 for 7 years. I have to hire a lawyer. I'm sorry, a detective. And under the New York State law, when you want to contact somebody, a detective have to ask that people for permission. So he asked permission so I could talk to him. And he said, absolutely. I've been looking for Willie for the last 7 years as well.
Because he was the guy who helped you bring Felipe
David
out.
And I said, you know, I called him. I said, Kenny, I want to talk to you. I'm doing a documentary called From the Rubble. And I want to be able to put your story as part of the documentary. And he said, Willie, I will be honored. I need to take this out of my system. And basically what he said, it was a lot of a shocking testimony.
We have a clip of what he said.
Oh, please, could you play it?
Yeah, would you roll that for us? You have that clip there?
You know, I'm going to try to get over it myself and maybe try to get help. But it'll always stick with me. You can't get over something like that. It's deep rooted inside you, and you'll never get over something like that. I hope that maybe in the future that I could put it to the side and maybe take care of it, take care of my problems. But as far as like letting it go, I could never let it go. It's too embedded in me.
So tragic. And Kenny took his own life.
A week after we did the interview.
Yes, he did. And there are so many stories of people who took their own life since 9/11, who were left with the confusing reality of what they lived through and then what the media and the government wants them to believe, where it's totally inconsistent with the truth of what they lived through. And that is a very difficult thing to deal with.
And Kenny was a hero, definitely.
Yes.
When we finished the interview, and one of the things that we ask is, were you ever called to testify? He said, no, I was never called to testify. What about by the FBI? No. The CIA? No. The 9/11 Commission? Nobody, Willie. Nobody called us. And when you have these people that have been through hell trying to tell their story and to take his own life a week after, it was very devastating for me. And we are in honor of his testimony, we are putting it as part of From the Rubble. Hopefully his memory will keep going on, at least on the documentary. You know?
Yes, without a doubt. If you want to look at Willie's documentary and hear more about his life and his story and really his courage in the face of insurmountable odds, not only to go back into that building, the amount of times that he did to help the firemen and put his own life at peril, but what happened to him when he wanted to tell the truth. And it's a pretty fascinating story and I think very eye-opening for a lot of people. Go to William911.com, William911.com, Willie Rodriguez, I adore you. I think you are literally.
And you have done also so much for us. You know, you don't talk about it, but Rosie has not only put her reputation, her fame, all her fame on the line. When she was on The View, she was totally attacked by media moguls. The day I was supposed to be on the show, she was attacked as well.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting that Willie Rodriguez was booked to be on The View in order for me to sort of shut up Elizabeth Hasselbeck. He was booked the day after the big blow up. I just thought that was kind of a fascinating timing.
Yeah.
But you know what, Willie? Here's the thing. When I met you and I sat down and had lunch with you and I read your story and I heard your life, there was no option for me. So it's a pleasure and an honor. And I hope that you'll come back and that we will be able to have 9/11 first responders here. We'll be able to have other people to talk about what their experience was so that we can really just inform people about things that maybe the media has not wanted them to look at. So thank you for being here, honey, very much. Hey, that's our show for today. This is Rosie Radio on Sirius XM. Hope you had a great time. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.